You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Paul, and I have the pleasure of having a good dear friend, crazy guy, and all around the award winner for longest hair in the drone industry, Mr. John McBride. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Paul. I do have nice hair, and everybody makes fun of it. And I was going to put a poll question out to ask what John McBride is mostly recognized for.
Hair. Just like Affleck and the duck, you're the hair. Hey, well, thanks for coming on the show today. If you're not familiar with John McBride, he owns a store called Rocky Mountain Unmanned Systems out of the great sunny state of Utah. And here today, he's going to talk to us about DJI's newest announcement concerning the PSDK, the new Skyport, the X-T2 camera, and the new slant range camera that has really come out to offer a new enterprise-grade solution for the Matrice series of drones. So before we get into it, John, what do you think was the most important kind of all-encompassing theme out of the announcement that we saw yesterday?
Well, knowing that, for the most part, that the X-T2 was basically coming. So there's a product that's very similar, is the Duo Pro R. And as we take a Duo Pro R and then integrate that into the DJI ecosystem, we end up with an X-T2. And so when it was released, we could see that it was put, kind of highlighted in a more public service type event area and spot. So this camera really does have a lot of features that are kind of specific to firefighting, search and rescue, public service cops, things like that. I mean, it's kind of tuned for that. But because it's got a twin imager, people are going to automatically want to do mapping and do imaging like that. It will kind of define, I think probably 80% of the sales will be for public service rather than the other. So I was pretty excited about that specific announcement. Some of the other key features that were there kind of highlighted the payload SDK. We'll talk a little bit about that. And some of the other sensors that are currently being used and or have worked with DJI's, again, ecosystem of application running, being able to do things with the app, which is really important, as far as functionality goes. So
definitely. Now, do you think that the X-T2, seeing that it has an EO imager and a thermal imager, I mean, you said it yourself, you think more people will use it for mapping. Is that really a big highlight of this camera? And do you think it'll have a large effect in the ag industry?
My honest opinion is that it's really geared for that public service use. Because an RGB camera, when we're going out and doing any type of mapping or anything like that, the sensor is really important. As you know, you've taught a lot of classes, you've shown a lot of people what different sensors can do, and that RGB sensor is going to have not limitation, but basically not the greatest setup for a mapping type system. Now, I just recently did a post that kind of explained using thermal and RGB together, why that is complicated in a general sense. And everybody, has and wants to save a ton of time. That's what they want. They want to do one flight. They want to fly and get twin imagers, three imagers, four imagers, and it's really problematic. It's not something that I suggest to do, but people are going to try it. They're going to experiment with it.
Definitely. So let me ask you this. What type of imager are we actually seeing in the X-T2? You said it's like the FLIR Duo R. So is it essentially the same imaging sensor that you would get on a View Pro? Is it that 336? Yeah, perfect. Okay, there it is.
So early days, this is about the same time that I actually met you. FLIR had basically come out with a sensor that had already been being used called the Tau 2. And that is the name of the core, the Tau 2 core. Well, the Tau 2 has been used in a number of things. It has been used in by itself, just in the core would start basically from the silver part forward, right? That portion right there has been used in a number of things, and you can buy a Tau2 core in a number of configurations when it comes down to just not the back end. So if you're very familiar with programming RS-232 commands, if you're familiar with trying to get video feed off of this thing, and we're talking like companies that have integrated and tried to do their own thing with the core, FLIR basically made it a little bit easier to take this core, add some features on the FLIR View initially, then the FLIR View Pro, and we've got SD card capability, Bluetooth capability to do configuration settings. We can then take that, you know, that USB and push that out to create a video signal that we can manage to use. Well, the XT1, now that we'll call it that, is basically the same thing, except instead of having just a back end part, we're taking the full gimbal, integrating that all into the ecosystem and DJI. That makes it a lot easier. And just between the functions of something that I can set up real quickly on a Phantom, or, you know, like you've seen the kit that I'd made a while back to put on the back of the Inspire, that now that you have DJI helping with that relationship and creating the communication to the core, you have 28, 29 different functions that the XT can do over a configuration like this, you know, of just strapping this on the back of a drone. So now we move over to the Duo Pro R, and we have the same idea, everything in the same package, twin sensor, Tau2 core, and then basically that unit by itself, which I forgot to bring. I thought I would have that here for you today just to kind of show that and how big it is in comparison. I mean, we're talking like that core doesn't change its size, so you've got an RGB next to it, and the unit ends up being pretty big, you know. So they took that same baseline model, moved it over into DJI's integration, added the gimbal, pretty much waterproofed it, if you will. You know, at least it can handle a little bit. And SD cards on the top. It's very clean, a very clean setup. Well, integrating a lot of the features, and like I said, some of the bonuses of working with DJI is really understanding some of the application features that you can do. They have the, you know, the temperature alarm, because all of the FLIR Duo Pro R, as well as the XT, will all be radiometric. And we can go a little bit into that.
If you want to say why that's important, just really quick, to have a radiometric thermal camera versus a non-radiometric, I think that would be important just for those who are listening who don't know the difference.
Okay, so the big difference between radiometric and non-radiometric, in just the easiest terms, basically every pixel that can pick up an amount of temperature, and we're just taking the information that the pixel is getting, and then transferring that or making that available to translate. There's an algorithm inside the camera that figures out how to make that into a temperature, and it's not super complicated, but it is complicated. You know, it's a little bit, you know. So you run into these things where some items in a radiometric sense look different. So I did a recent post again that had the temperature of my skin versus the temperature of this piece of metal. They're both the same temperature, but when you look at them through a radiometric camera, if it's not tuned correctly, the camera, and we look at the same thing, these temperatures can be quite different, 10 to 15 degrees different. I can tune it for this tune the camera in radiometric to get an appropriate temperature of radiation of this actual piece of metal, but it's problematic. Even just moving it around, you can see that it's really shiny, and when it shines and bounces, and you can have heat radiating and bouncing, and that gives you a bad indication of what the real temperature of this piece of metal is. Whereas skin, rubber, sometimes wood, things like that have a much better emissivity value. That emissivity, the higher we can get closer to 1.0 or 100% perfect emissivity, is good to take temperatures off of. So
for a practical sense too, you need a radiometric thermal camera to do any sort of thermography mapping. Is that correct?
That's, you know, it makes it a lot easier on the guys that are stitching it, and that's true. So it makes it a lot easier to take. So if it's not radiometric, and we're just talking like I have a FLIR view here. This one is not radiometric, meaning that it can take a thermal image. It can still do images that save it in a radiometric 16-bit file, and that file is a lot easier to transfer over to guys the problem with not being radiometric is that you don't always get the best results when it comes down to trying to get absolute temperature. Could you still make a relative temperature difference map with this camera? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. But it's not going to be as accurate if you need absolute temperature.
Gotcha. So let me ask you this. With the X-T2, are there going to be two different sensor sizes, the 336 and the 640, or is it just going to be available as one particular camera? And then my next question is when can we expect to see this camera in the market, and what drones will it work for?
Excellent question. So very similar to 640, you've got a 9mm, 13mm, 19mm, and a 25mm lens. So the 25 is fairly new into this theme of running what we've been running on UAS, because they don't have a 25mm XT. So that 25mm will be a lot smaller field of view, but nothing changes in the RGB. And then on the 336, we're still going to have a 13mm, or a 9mm, 13mm, and a 19mm. So there will be seven, you know, basic versions of the camera. They will all be radiometric to simplify it, because we have seen a lot of problems with the XT, as well as, you know, there's 26 different models with the XT. It 9 hertz, 30 hertz. Yeah, it just really makes it tough on a guy like me to try and get the appropriate stuff out or make a recommendation, you know, to use the best sensor. But there's no wrong or right.
So when can we expect to see these sensors come out, and what do you think it'll cost?
Just like anything that gets announced by DJI, it takes a little time. When? We could probably see them here in the next month or two, but I mean, I would be very cautious on just being the first adopter, purchaser, jumping all right over it. Let guys like us do the testing, make sure that everything's good to go, it's working well. You can get on the list of a product purchase, but it shouldn't be too long.
Gotcha. So with the X-T2, they also released the Skyport, so cameras like the Slant Range can be added on to different birds. And actually, before I move on, what particular birds will be able to handle the X-T2 payload? Is it going to be Matrice 200 and 210 only, or 200, 210, and 600? What can we expect here?
Okay, let's be very specific on this, because it's already starting to buzz all over the forums everywhere. People trying to talk about it. I've seen articles already made. It's very simple. M200 series, M600.
That's it.
Nothing else. It's not going to work on an Inspire 2. It's not going to work on an Inspire 1. It's not going to work on a – and everyone gets a little upset about that, but it is made for the M200, M210, 210 RTK, and the M600 Pro.
Well, you know, I can understand people's frustration and disappointment that certain cameras don't work on certain birds. I mean, I called you, 3 weeks ago when I was out in Atlanta, and I'm like, I'm trying to fly the X7 and the X4S together, and it won't let me do it. So, you know, I heard about the new Skyport, and I was like, well, maybe I can fly the X7 now on the M210.
Right. Well, you got to remember that when DJI creates stuff, they don't just make a piece of hardware that just, you know, talks, you know, just a piece of hardware connection is a lot different than having the processors, depending on where they are in the ship, where the software is in order to accommodate that sensor. And since you're bringing up the Skyport, that piece of hardware is going to create just communication paths to the M200 series. And that, again, the Skyport is just going to be only for the M200 series right now. It is not going to be for the other
set. So not even the M600.
Nope, it won't even be available for the M600. So we already know, you know, like I said, that when you get into SDK, and SDK is very complicated when it comes down to just the normal do-it-yourself kind of guy trying to do something with SDK. When we talk about just taking a typical gimbal and throwing it onto something, this is probably not going to be the pathway. Slant Range Slant Range, for an example, MicaSense maybe can utilize this Skyport. anybody in the gas industry that might have a specialized methane sensor that could utilize the Skyport and that communication.
So the Skyport is really just a way for essentially hardware to communicate with the bird itself and the flight controller and have the IMU GPS data and all that and actually see a VTX feed, things like that.
That's correct. But that will take a lot of back end programming to make it work, to include helping, you know, working with DJI. So there's going to be basically licensing that you have to buy for this. It isn't, like I said, made for a DIY guy. I mean, even I, with the experience I have, is not going to take a, you know, whatever gimbal that you can buy from some manufacturer and try to use a Skyport, put it on, and it's just going to work. You're going to have to create a lot more back-end programming and setup for anything like that. So I don't want to misrepresent what Skyport actually means or what the payload SDK means. Super potential to be able to work with DJI and their engineers to get your specialized sensor onto the M210 or M200. But it's not just a, you know, turn and click and you're good to go. It's not going to be that. A lot more complicated than that.
Gotcha. Would you say that macro kind of ideology here, that DJI is opening up the doors to work with more vendors and clients to appeal to more industries?
So if we go back to the one of my all-time favorite ships in the world is the Inspire 1. I mean, baby, that's such a good bird.
The Ferrari of drones.
Three years old this bird is. I have one with almost 2,000 flights on it. I have another one with about 1,400 flights on it. But you just can't quite tune that to the stuff because it just doesn't have the hardware from 3 year ago creation. You know, it just doesn't have that. So now we're moving on to the M200 and 210 series and kind of making them into more industrial platforms, whereas the Inspire 2 was never really intended to be an industrial platform. That's not what it was intended for. It was intended to be for the cinema guy or you know, whatever. And the Inspire 1, believe it or not, was also fell into that same category. But guess what people did? They started using it for inspection. They started using it for all of these other things. And so obviously DJI has seen that need and the ability to take specialized sensors made by and creating partnerships to be able to do these types of things and make them available to the general public, you know, or to the higher end inspection guys. Very important. It's a good move. But again, just clarifying that it's not going to be just a let's put our sensor on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, the Skyport, I definitely think is something that's a good move for DJI. Again, I wish that I could use Skyport to connect my X7 to the M210, but, you know, whatever.
there's so many times when I get hardware, I have ships, I have cameras, I have connection. I mean, it's my job at RMUS is the R&D test, figure out solutions. Sometimes, like I said, just DJI does a great job getting the initial stuff out, but that there's just some quirks that happen, and we specialize in finding those simple little band-aids for now and then letting the appropriate people at DJI know, hey, we're having these kinds of problems. Firmware is updated. The fix happens. It's great. You know, and so that's my main job. But, yeah, if you don't think I've already tried to make things work, you know, it's basically what I do.
Yeah. Yes.
It's just a, I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, and you never want to hear that from a guy like you either. Cause you know, like for sure, definitively, like it don't work.
Yeah. it just don't work.
Yeah. So, all right. So there were some other new cool things that DJI kind of put out there. And one thing that I thought was really neat was that new little directional light. What did they call that, and what do you think that, you know, that would be good for?
You know what? It's funny that you ask what they call it, but basically...
I didn't know. I didn't see a name for the thing.
I didn't either. So as far as the light goes and controlling the light, you can do... Romeo Dersher just put another little video out on some of the features of using that part. And that same thing is using the Skyport. So that is using a Skyport. that is probably manufactured by a separate company and not specifically a DJI branded product.
Oh, gotcha.
So we're going to take that unit. And he was demonstrating how you can turn lights on and off. He was also demonstrating that it had a little laser on there, laser pointer built into it. Also a pretty cool feature, you know. So, you know, and again, what the name of it, Spotlight. It's called it's a spotlight.
Searchlight, so. I think is what he's calling it. I just had to pull it up. So Searchlight Payload SDK, not a final configuration or product, but a sense of how things work. It's a 40-watt, 6-volt, 5,000 lumen light.
There you go.
Working distance of 300 feet. Interesting.
So this is a perfect example, and also the slant range when we get to it. This is a perfect example of the payload SDK actually working with a sensor that DJI didn't specifically make. It could have been made by another company and then trying to incorporate that into the ecosystem. So,
gotcha. Very cool. Very cool. So let me ask you this. With this system, I mean, the Skyport, if I remember correctly, is only going to work with the M200 and M210, no M600, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
So I find it really interesting, and I know DJI watches the show, so I'm going to say this right now. I find it interesting that the M600 cannot work with Skyport, because another really useful system that was just announced at Airworks, which I haven't seen deployed in the field yet, maybe you have, in fact, I'm sure you have, is the Dropbox, the system where you can actually drop payloads from, say, a Wind 4 or a Wind 8, which, of those of you who don't know, is another DJI platform. And I asked you, I think it was over the phone yesterday, I said, you know, if I buy an M210, can you put a Dropbox on it? Because I really want to use that for the fly-in, you know, our upcoming conference. Mm-hmm. And you were like, oh, well, the Dropbox doesn't work on the M210. So it's like, okay, yeah. Well, if I can't get the Dropbox on the M210 or the M200, then I got to look at an M600 or a Wind 4, but then I can't use Skyport, then I can't use the light, then I can't use, you know, this, that, and the other. And it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, we've got it. So the biggest thing that RMUS helps with, and this is a big challenge every day in which we deal with people that want to buy stuff. They want to buy one machine that does it all. And there's no such thing. I will tell you right now, I've designed, helped with, put together, added to, modified hundreds of different ships in order to accommodate a specialized whatever. And everybody wants to buy that one ship and have it do everything. But it's just in the way that one ship might operate, like an M600, which again is my second all-time favorite ship, is the M600. To try and make an M600 do what an M200 does, and then what basically an Inspire 1 did, and there's just too many things that create problems because everybody wants to do that. Now the box for I'm gonna sit back. The box is fairly big. If you haven't seen that, it's a fairly large box. So I wasn't telling you, no, you couldn't control it. I'm telling you, no, that baby's probably going to be having a hard time lifting it.
Oh.
So it's more about, I mean, could you function control it? It's got the same kind of connections and setups and possibilities there to do it. But you'll just have to consider that by the time you put the box on the bottom, that's going to block some of the sensors that are on the bottom of an M210. You know, those sensors are not there on an M600. You don't have landing sensors. You don't have obstacle avoidance sensors on an M600 or a Wind or a Wind 8. Those aren't there. Gotcha. You also have a lot. The box is a lot larger, right? So there's a possibility where the gimbal connects that you're going to have too much space and you can't move the gimbals on an M210. You know, they just don't have the wire for that. So could you physically put it on the bottom? Probably. That would be something I would do just to see. But you know,
got a new challenge for John here.
Yeah, the functionality is still there. The capability is there. The way the box operates is going to be there, but you end up losing a lot of other functionalities because of how much weight does a M210 really carry? And that is the all-time question of you know, an M600 will carry 17 pounds pretty good. You know,
so what is the payload capacity of, say, a 210? Because when you got two cameras on there, too, I mean, are we accounting for the payload with two cameras or without two cameras?
Then the exactly.
The next question is, are we accounting with TB55 batteries or TB50 batteries?
Exactly. So these are the questions that people are like, I just want to strap something on the bottom and carry it. You have to figure out all those limitations at one point or another. It's got to happen. And if you don't know those, it creates the ship to do bad things in the air. You know, overweight is not good. And then flying at different altitudes. Also, you know, I'm at 4,600 feet. Some people fly down there at higher altitudes, lower altitudes. That all is factors of throwing weight, life preservers, extra, you know, dropping modules, things like that. You just have to make it practical. And most of the time, it's just throw a whole bunch of stuff on there and see if it works. You know, not recommended to use it all the time. It's like a one-time, two-time deal, you know, that you can carry a big life preserver across a lake or something like that and drop it, you know, but usually not highly recommended on a smaller ship like that. And considering an M210, it looks big, but it's still fairly small.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It fits in an I2 case. So, all right, well, let me ask you this. It seems like DJI is really making the M200 series to be the enterprise-grade ship. How long do you think that ship will be relevant for? Like, how long do you think they will be supporting that vehicle to have all these different enterprise-grade solutions on them?
Well, there's no guarantee in anything that gets manufactured, period, regardless of who it is. There is no guarantee of any of that. But to basically fit this into the scheme of enterprise, meaning public service, inspection people, and we keep it in that relationship instead of consumer electronics where everybody's got to have something new every second, you know. Yeah. Oh, it's new. I got to have it, you know. These guys are going to
Unless it's a GoPro. Unless it's a GoPro.
Of course. To keep it in that enterprise section and maintain it, you know, you would expect it to be at least a 5-year product. 5 years of just maintaining, running, batteries available. I mean, here, this announcement just now, remember the M210 has only been out since I think we released those maybe October, September.
I was going to say Q3 last year, I think so. Yeah.
So 6 months, maybe. I mean, it's only been out that long. And here we've just announced SDK, a cooler, you know, cooler payloads we can throw on there. I mean, that took some time, even with a cool product like the M600 and the Inspire, is that adding these payloads took some time. And we're just barely getting to an Inspire being 3.5 years old now, almost 3.5 years old, you know.
The Inspire 2 just doesn't fly like the I1. I mean, I love my Inspire 2. I get some great footy with it. But if it's a windy day and you're trying to do, you know, that move, you know what I'm talking about, where you bring in. Yeah. The Inspire 2 just always over-yaws. Like, it over-calculates yaw for some weird reason. And I still can't figure out what it is. But I love my Inspire 2, don't get me wrong, but I agree with you, Inspire 1 is by far the best bird that they've ever made. Which brings me to the final point of our conversation, and again, thank you for being on the show.
Absolutely.
If I were in public safety, if I were in inspections, what do you think the best drone for me is right now? Do you think it's an M210? Do you think it's an M600? And I ask you in these 3 points. So let me give you 3 categories, okay? I know you're – I'm pretty sure I know
Don't
what you're going to say.
Don't put me on the spot, dude. Don't put me up. No, I'm just kidding.
But let's – okay. Most reliable, so I can fly more days out of the year. All right? So super windy days. It's the most portable. And what's the best for the price point?
And you're just – okay. So this is a loaded question.
Such a loaded question.
So at RMUS, we have built 157 M600s. Out of 157 M600s, I have had this many be weird out of the box.
How many? Because your video feed has gone out. So how many is that many?
Zero. A big zero. Double zeros, you know. So as far as that goes, is video gone altogether?
No, I just have this really awkward face of you where your eyes are closed and you're kind of looking like this. It's kind of funny.
I'm sorry. Maybe my Wi-Fi isn't really that great today, Paul.
It's okay. Most people listen on iTunes, so I don't think it'll be too big of a problem. But anyway, continue on.
So the M600, being the platform that it is, and you asked about the mobility of an M600. It's really not that mobile, but you know, when you go into an M210, now we've got an M210 that is more than capable of doing twin imaging, which I've already done with an M600, and that's tough to do, to transmit or move twin images. We have the ability to do SDK if you're into that, mobile as well as onboard SDK. And the platform itself is fairly easy to to transport.
So what I'm hearing from you is M210.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Now let me explain, and this is a really big deal between people understanding what RTK is, and I'll just
please go into that, because someone just said, like, should I buy a Matrice M210 RTK for mapping? And I was like, no, don't do it. So yeah.
Okay, what is the design of RTK in general? RTK means real time kinematic. That's a way that you have multiple positioning of sensors, basically GPS sensors, that are able to communicate quickly between each other rather than waiting for data to come from the sky and changing. That does take some time. So the unit that usually is flying, your flight controller, has to be told to do things because you're flying under GPS. Well, when RTK is available to talk and communicate in that way on DJI's setup, we have a much faster reaction to making sure that the ship stays straight. We have a much faster reaction to altitude because now we're not using a barometric pressure changer inside. And that takes time to process, to think. Now we've got triangulation. And that happens quickly, you know. And then the third sensor that goes away is your compass. So your compass can have a lot of anomalies depending on where you fly. And that compass direction with the three, it triangulates and is much faster in communication for the flight controller to make a decision. Now, what everybody wants to do is take the RTK data, because they understand RTK as centimeter, multimeter accuracy. Depending on how it's set up in RTK, yes, you can do this, but this is not the way that the DJI is set up. It's not set up that way.
So if I understand what you're saying is people are wanting the RTK data to be in the EXIF backend data of every photo so that they can use that information for processing.
What they're trying to do is get away from using ground control points.
Yeah.
That is the whole end game, is to not use ground control points. So I don't have to walk out to a space. Align the ground control points later with data. Yeah, that's the whole point. That's the ultimate end goal, is not to use ground control points. And this is very true when you're talking about linesmen that have, you know, a mile stretch of line, and it's already difficult to try and get a four-wheeler or a truck or anything out that way. And now they're going to map positions and do inspections of their lines and, you know, their high-powered voltage lines. They're going to do that. And they don't want to use ground control point. I mean, if they have to drive it a mile away anyway, why fly the bird a mile away, right? So would that be a focus that maybe DJI could do later? Absolutely. But the EXIF data right now, we just have to kind of work within the GIS platform and the GIS setup to really just utilize why it was made. You know, so why would TK use?
Let me ask you this, because a lot of people are asking – they're asking us to do a build class with the 600 to use something like Sony A7R Mark II or the RX1, you know, that big full-frame sensor, super tiny camera, to do mapping. And they're talking about using a standalone IMU and standalone GPS unit that communicates with the camera itself to remove GCPs. Is that something that you offer through RMUS right now?
to try to remove GCPs is nearly impossible.
Well, I agree with you 100%, but my question to you is, are you currently building M600s that have like a separate IMU and compass that work in directly with specific cameras? Like kind of like micro drones.
So what it would be is basically, Micro Drones has their solution.
Is it the MG4 or MP4?
Yeah, David Dvorak. Yeah. That's another company that has a solution to be able to put a GPS puck. But the workflow, like I said, is just not there yet. And it's just not there yet to be able to eliminate the complete GCP idea. You know, it's still something that has to be calibrated. Even the top end surveyors are going to tell you this.
They're
going to tell you this. They can't go out in a real aircraft and fly around and not have some kind of an alignment point ever. And that's been something going on for the last 70 years.
Yeah.
They've been taking photos with the aircraft. Well, now they're able to GPS tag them to kind of know where they came from, but at the same time, it's just not part of the thing. So I don't want to say it's snake oil to say that any company can make something without being able to do that, but in a nutshell, it pretty much is. I just don't see a real good solution yet out there in the market.
Gotcha. All right, so my last question for the show is, when do you expect to see Skyport and the Slant Range and all these systems to really be widely available? Does this go back to our whole DJI release 1 to 2 months?
Yeah, I mean it's not a typical thing, but it's enough to create the manufacturing buzz. It's enough to create the ability for them to understand how many people might be interested in such a thing. And so when it comes down to manufacturing anything, creating anything, it takes time to do that. And by the time the little guys are all done making soldering boards and all this other stuff, they've got to get kind of a guesstimate on what that's going to do. So that's typically the reason why it takes a little time after announcing something, because we'll just go back to something that happened with the Mavic. The Mavic itself, when it was announced the day of, 300,000 units in the United States went on back order that day.
Wow.
On that day. So do you think DJI was like, oh yeah, we've got 300,000 units sitting in a warehouse somewhere? No. It took them a few months to get that product out there to the people that paid for it that day. So this is the same idea. I mean, it's going to take a little time. Let's not jump the gun quite yet. Let's try to understand. We'll try to get the information out there the best we can as far as ArmUS is concerned. I'll probably have beta units here pretty soon that we'll be able to do some testing, internal testing, as well as sharing some of that testing stuff to you. So,
awesome, John. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it, as always. If people wanted to find you, where should they go?
So the best place, and this is, again, what I just want to kind of clarify, is that my role at ArmUS is to be the R&D, the testing, try to answer questions in that area. But when people want to buy stuff or ask me if I have something in stock or how much it costs, the best thing to do is to take a look at ArmUS.com. That's the simplest place. But then if you need any kind of a product or a bid or anything like that, sales@ArmUS.com is usually the best. And you'll get a good response from my guys.
You know, if I were you, I would have just flicked the hair back and be like, if it's not important, don't call me.
Really, on a technical standpoint, I try to help out as much as possible. I mean, we know that. But then again, like I said, I have a team. I'm not the only guy at ArmUS.
Well, we know. I like to just give you a hard time, John. That's all. All right, guys. Well, that is going to do it for our show today. John, thank you again so much. If you have a question, go to askdroneu.com and upload your question. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. But that is going to do it for us today. My name is Paul, and you're watching Ask Drone U.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone Youth.